Hello, happy Friday. Welcome back. Relatively Football is back in session. Two siblings, lots of women's football, lots of news, and it's going to be a great episode. Thank you for joining us, listener. I'm here from New Orleans. This is Theo, and I'm here with my sister Flo.
Hello. Yeah, second episode of the week. So a big week
for us.
Two
in a week, mate.
And quite close together because we ended up recording.
Stop me if you've heard this one before.
Yeah, literally. We ended up recording, on a Tuesday? And it's now Friday, so...
Late on a Tuesday as
well.
Yeah,
back to back.
Yeah, thanks for bearing with us, listener. A, for being here in general. Thank you. And secondly, thanks for bearing with us through what, at least on behind the scenes, we're going to just take back the curtain a little bit, was a very, very stressful recording session on Thursday.
I was in such a bad
mood. On Tuesday. We were both in a bad... I was actually feeling really great. And then by the end of it, I was like, I never want to do this podcast ever again.
I was so over it.
So thank you for bearing with us because Tuesday was really hard work. Yeah. And... Yeah, we're still here.
Yeah, so and I have Wi-Fi back now. I'm on the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, Crystal, we've been Zooming like there's no tomorrow. Yeah. No more WhatsApp recording sessions for us. So yeah, it's been a big week, obviously, since last weekend, the wrap-up Tuesday. You know, women's football right now just does not stop. So let's get straight down to the midweek matches. There was a lot of them, Flo. Champions League, Conti Cup. And in my opinion, the game of the week was the relegation battle that happened in the WSL. Where do you want to go to first, Flo? Should we bump
I think let's go to that Villa game because I think there was a lot of focus on...
Let's go to the Villa game.
There was a lot of focus on the Champions League, fair enough. But I just want to dive into that Villa game because...
I've heard of it.
It was an intriguing result, and I texted you about it because I saw the result. I didn't watch the game, but I saw the result. I've watched the highlights since, and I was pretty shocked. And I texted you to ask what were the lineups like, because I presumed Bristol City had, you know, rested most of their team. And actually, you said what one change was it, or any change? Was there one change in the end? You said
unchanged
from that really good result against Reading. The progress that I mentioned on the pod about how I thought they were moving.
Yeah, we got this one
wrong. Were moving in the right direction, seeing so much progress. I was really impressed. I mean, really one to forget for them. But a big result for Villa. Huge result. And I thought the standout performance for me was Shania Hales, who I thought was exceptional. Or Shania, actually. I think it's Shania, isn't it? Shania Hales. And I kind of knew of her a little bit, but didn't know that much about her. So I did a little bit of digging to find out a bit more about her. She's a local girl. She played at Birmingham, but played in the WSL, she played at Birmingham. But she was part of Villa's youth setup. So she's kind of come through their academy system. And she was so good. So, so, so good.
Unplayable.
Yeah.
Unplayable.
And it's weird because she's had quite a quiet season since going up with Villa. She scored 8 goals last season before the season ended abruptly. So she was one of their standout players. But I've just been, I don't know, surprised that she started 4 games, been involved in 7. Those were her first goals of the season. But she was everywhere the other night. She was involved in everything. She was unplayable, and I'm just so surprised.
She got an assist as well.
Yeah, she played such a big part in everything. And I don't know, I'm just really surprised that it's taken this long for us to see how talented she is. So yeah, one to keep an eye on for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, she's only, you know, come, like you said, through Birmingham, back to the Championship, back to the WSL. So I think giving her a little bit of time to bed in is totally fair. You also got to think about the teams Villa have played against. You know, this game, Villa had a lot more of the ball than they maybe normally would in other games. You know, they've now beaten Brighton and they've beaten Bristol. So they've kind of taken care of business in games where they're getting a little bit more of the ball and they can kind of start to play their way. I think what impressed me most about Shania Hales was I've actually kind of, she's been on my radar, but more as a back to the goal type of player, you know what I mean? Like she's almost, I think she's done a really good job trying to play in Follis or trying to play in other, you know, even like Diana Silva can kind of play that wide attacker. So if you have Hales in the middle, you almost get a little bit more out the players around her. But what she did on Wednesday night was she just went up the gut.
Yeah, and just went at them, didn't she?
She went at it. Yeah, and I haven't really seen that from her, where she's playing with the ball at her feet, going, you know,
she went past like three players at one point. For her.
Yeah, poor Naomi Lazel. 16-year-old Naomi Lazel playing her second game in 4 days, was bullied for two of those goals, just one-on-one with Hales, and just got so done. And they were good. What I liked about the goals as well is they were really tight angles. Like I said, she'd blow past that centre-back, she'd win her duel, she'd bring it down, and then just when you think the angle's gone, she managed to score and get it in the back of the net. And yeah, it was really impressive. But like you said, I don't think 4-0 was fair as a scoreline. Petzelberger and Hales went off in that final 30 minutes. But this was a really close game. And actually, I would argue maybe for the first 45 minutes, Bristol were maybe just about the better team.
There was that penalty shout early on as well that Bristol were crying out for. I don't know. I mean, I watched the highlights and you could never really tell from those highlights. But did you think it was a penalty on Ebony Salmon early on?
No, I don't think it was. I think it was fair play. I think Ebony Salmon looked amazing, though. And I think the fact that it nearly was a penalty was a sign of how much Villa respected her. And Indau and Caroline Siems had a handful. And often the downside of Bristol playing so defensively is that Ebony Salmon often ends up on her own up top, even when she plays sometimes as like a left midfielder. And I think what you saw in this game was a really close game where Bristol set up just like they did against, you know, Arsenal and City, five at the back. They really wanted to try and block a Villa out. But then when they tried to twist it, and in the 55th minute, Oxtoby brings on Abby Harrison when they're 1-0 down, you know, she tries to kind of get someone to go up top and go 4-4-2 with Ebony Salmon. You then just see Villa and play, you know, young players like Naomi Lazel not look as comfortable with four at the back. And that's just kind of where it went wrong. And the game could have been so different because Charlie Wellings has one cleared off the line by Asmita Ayle, who was fantastic. Asmita Ayle's actually another Villa player to kind of keep an eye on. And Asmita Ayle blocks the ball off the line. Charlie Wellings thinks she's going to score. And then 90 seconds later, Hales gets the second goal and Villa go on, you know, 2-0, 3-0, 4-0. So the game was kind of decided in this weird two-minute spell.
I think what's really interesting about the result is, as a consequence, West Ham are dragged into the bottom two now, making this relegation fight a lot more interesting. And we're seeing the first sign of West Ham really being down there, because it kind of been Villa and Bristol City and West Ham sort of just about doing enough with a draw here and there to keep afloat. But they've been properly dragged into it now.
Yeah, although I think my takeaway from this game was I'm worried that Bristol might end up on their own. When you talk about getting dragged in, I think, and we'll get to the previews at the end of the show, but if West Ham get a result on the weekend, you know, how many more chances are Bristol going to get? It felt like this, if Bristol had won this, or even if they got a point.
Yeah, it was a bit of a must win, I guess.
I mean, yeah, like you said, they're going into another must win on Sunday. And actually, Tanya Oxtoby's in her presser after the game, she said, you know, the good news for us is we've got a game in 4 days. We can get this result behind us. You know, we move on. But I think it was a really tough night for Bristol, but it was a much closer game than the scoreline showed. And Bristol actually lost 4-0 at home to Birmingham this year. So they'll be really disappointed against these kind of quote-unquote lesser WSL sides. Bristol have really struggled. And I think maybe that's the hard part of being a counter-attacking team, where you know your duties against bigger sides. We'll stay in England for a moment, and we'll move on to the Conti Cup flow. Birmingham are out. RIP my Conti Cup Carla t-shirt. And Leicester won on a penalty shootout. The highlights.
This was a classic.
Yeah, you love to see it.
What you love to see from a penalty shootout.
Hannah Hampton taking a penalty.
Yes. What are the key things you want to see from any penalty? Well, firstly, cup games, if you don't have a vested interest, you always want it to end in penalties because it's fun. It's fun for the neutral.
No extra time as well, which makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah, exactly. Straight to pens. Give us the drama. Give us the chaos. Love that. So tick. You've got Hannah Hampton taking a penalty. Tick.
Number three. She was third on the list.
Yeah, really early on. And you've also got the penalty where it went to sudden death, didn't it? Because the qualities of penalties were so good.
5-5.
And you had that really good save earlier in the game.
Molly
Green. From Birmingham's Molly Green, which was... her penalty was a really good penalty. So for the Leicester keeper, and I apologise to her if she...
Kirstie Lavelle.
Oh yeah, Kirstie Lavelle, on the off chance she listened to this pod because I didn't remember her name, but that was a very good save from her, because Molly Green really positioned that right kind of a difficult level to get, not really super low, but she had to dive low and towards the corner. So really good save from her. So I've really enjoyed the highlights. It is a tough watch on those Conti Cup highlights because that bloody graphic swipe, which makes it a little bit painful. And I also enjoyed the way that there was a commentator who was obviously doing the live stream,
Darren Carter,
that night, and you could pick up on his comms, which was quite nice because it added a little bit more flavor to these really basic, super quick clips where you don't linger, you don't get any replays. Like, as soon as the penalty was saved, it moved on so quickly, and I was like, I want to watch that again, let me rewind. I love that. I've really enjoyed the whole drama of it all, and I think it shows that Leicester can play it and match it with the best now, because Birmingham put out a strong team, and obviously penalty shootout,
so did Leicester.
It's a lottery, but
you're talking about Villa and Bristol. Great game. It was kind of similar. Both teams didn't rest any players. They took this game very seriously. And I thought Birmingham started the better team. But to be honest, the longer the game went on, I thought Birmingham were really poor. And Leicester really grew into the game. So in all walks of football, cup competitions don't always mean that much. But not the best way to prepare this week for Birmingham. To have that game, play your best team and not really show up. Flo, what do you say to Connie Schofield, who clipped the bar with that losing penalty? What do you say to her?
That's harsh, because all the standards of the penalties were really good. And I think if you're going to go, at least getting it on target is a plus. It wasn't over the bar, it smashed the bar. So
I think the stats head might tell you that hitting the bar is not on target. But
oh yeah, true, because the goalie's not making a save. Yeah. I in my world of stats that I've made up,
we'll give you the on target.
That is a target of some sort. Yeah, that's true, actually. But yeah, great standard of penalty shootouts, one of the best. Check it out.
Yeah, and I'm excited because you've got Durham and Leicester now in the last eight of the Conti Cup. So we've got a couple of upset teams. I think that's going to be really fun to watch. And Palace as well should make the last eight unless Everton batter Man United by about 5 goals next week. But we will keep you updated on that one. So then we'll cross over to the continent, flow, Chelsea and Man City and many others away in Europe. What jumped out to you from the Champions League this week?
I think the obvious choice is going to be the Juve-Lyon game.
Ooh, lots of fun.
Which was loads of fun as well.
I watched that one live. I just want to thank Jesse and Becky for keeping me entertained on Twitter while I was watching it.
Yeah, Becky, the Studs Instagram stories was really good.
Really fun.
I watched it on a Juve stream, so I had Italian commentary. I don't know what commentary you had.
I had no comms.
So I was watching on something that I'm pretty sure was illegal, but it was a feed of the Sky Italia coverage. So I had fantastic Italian commentary, and
which
the best,
obviously
my
you
favorite
understand,
bit.
You understand?
Yeah,
you know,
I'm fluent, and my favorite bit was when it was 2-0 and they went 2-2. I was like, fantastic! That's what I came here for. Great Italian voices, love it. So yeah, I got a great little continental experience, but what a game.
I think it's funny you talk about the continental experience, because all I remember from my stream was the Juve stadium DJ playing Kaiser Chiefs at halftime,
because I logged off at halftime. I had one of those ambient streams on the CD,
but I had one of those ambient streams with no comms, and it just, you know, it's just like stuck there at halftime.
Yeah, the single camera, it's just
single
lingers.
Camera, yeah. So I was listening to Kaiser Chiefs, and I was like, who in Turin is, you know, holding a candle?
Yeah,
they're
huge fans. I think I'm definitely reading too much into this, so I'm sure, you know, big jump to conclusions. But I do think it is a really exciting sign of the new era for European women's club football. And last Champions League, which obviously ended in that bubble tournament in Spain, I think a lot of people pinpointed that and thought, is Lyon's reign finally over? Are Wolfsburg going to finally do it and get one over on them and win the Champions League for the first time in a while? And they did come pretty close, but then it kind of unraveled eventually in that final game. But I think for someone to push Lyon this close early on, considering Juve lost 4-1 to Barca in the round of 32 last season, and Barca are one of the you know, if not considered the second best team in Europe. And they got absolutely destroyed by Lyon in the Champions League final a couple of years ago. The growth, not only from Juve, but the quality of the Italian league, and for Juve to do that with a team predominantly made up of domestic talent, I think is a great sign for the strength of European women's football. Not a fully professional league, but one that individual clubs are sort of pushing and funding. Ended up in disappointment when it got cancelled for COVID. But I think it's so exciting. I'm pretty sure everyone bar Lyon fans want to see the unfortunate end of this dynasty. They've had a hugely positive impact on football because they've pulled everyone else up with them, I do think, who want a piece of this. I think it's really exciting to see what could happen this season.
I agree with you on all those points, but I think watching this game...
There was a stroke of luck, yeah.
I don't think Juve are ready to...
I'm getting a bit overexcited, I think.
No, I want you to get overexcited. You know, I think what you're saying is A, true, and B, so important, like you said, to build the game and to see how Lyon have, like, raced everyone else. And Jesse JPH, they, you know, constantly come out with great content, but I think they had a tweet talking about this is the first time Lyon have trailed in a Champions League match. You know, we're not talking about losing yet. We're just talking about being down in a game. So Juve deserve credit for taking the lead, not once, but twice. I think on the flip side, a bit like that Champions League final back in the summer, once Lyon got going, I thought they were much the better team. And a bit like Wolfsburg, I actually thought Barcelona maybe gave Lyon the biggest threat in the summer. But it felt like, yeah, once Lyon took control of the game and I did one of those tweets where I looked really stupid again. I was kind of like, the key to this game is going to be Cascarino. And then in the 50th minute, the Lyon manager took off Cascarino. But luckily...
you're such a Cascarino stan, though.
I'm absolute Cascarino.
You can't help it.
We'll get to the top 100 in a minute. But I'm a huge Cascarino stan. But it felt like, yeah, we hadn't seen anything from her. And what Juve did really well was be physical and make sure that they, you know, were... playing nice and deep, so a player like Cascarino is not going to, you know, blow you on a high line or be able to get into that space behind you. But I still thought, you know, Lyon should have maybe kept trying to do that. But anyway, they bring on Melvin Mallard, and she could just completely turn the game on its head and was fantastic and got a goal and assist off the bench in the second half. So again, to give Lyon their credit, they knew kind of how to change the game and how to do the difference. And I think what Juve, excuse my cat, I think what Juve did well was kind of pick... Oh my goodness!
She hates your take.
She absolutely hates
your take on Lyon Juve.
I think what Juve did well was they hit him simple and they hit him early. And Lena Hertig with that goal on the matching up against Carpenter, I think that's just, you know, you don't put a ball in and you don't try and outjump Wendy Renard. But if you put that ball in the back post and you have a physical player like Hertig matched up on Carpenter, you know, that was a great kind of little bit of tactics. So I think Juve got their tactics right and they came in early and were able to, like, do a few things right. But can you sustain that for 90 minutes against a team as good as Lyon? No.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's, the you know, a spark of something new. You kind of talked about when we were flirting with the Champions League, maybe last week, you were talking about watching out for PSV and Bayern.
Oh yeah, it didn't exactly become like this, you know.
Well, you know, PSV lost 3-0 at home to Barcelona. Ajax lost 1-3 to Bayern. So yeah, we have, again, we're seeing glimpses, but we're not quite seeing it. But at least these aren't 5-6-7-0. I was going to kind of give you a compliment on, like, you know, these are competitive games, and I'm sure you saw Lika Martin's goal in the Barcelona game was just,
yeah,
you know,
I think
top quality.
There were a lot of goals, which was great. I think the first legs of these rounds of 32 have been a mega goal fest. I would say maybe there's still that we'll see after the second legs the aggregate scores and how we're looking strength and depth wise, because that's when we tend to get the sort of 13-0 on aggregate. So that Rosengard game, which I think looks like the biggest defeat of that first round of fixtures. Yeah, 7-0 that they beat. Is it Lanchhouti? Georgian team?
Oh, yeah, I've got a season ticket in Tbilisi.
And I would actually say, full disclaimer, we are not the best people to be giving analysis on the Women's Champions League, because there's lots of teams that I've literally never heard of, aka the Georgian champions, in this pool of teams. And if you want that good stuff, follow Sophie Lawson on Twitter. The woman travels to the depths of Finland in order to make sure she knows what's going on in European women's football. So there's people who know far more about these teams than we do. We obviously mainly know about the bigger clubs, the bigger teams, the ones based in England, which always seems to happen. But I do think, you know, Chelsea beat Benfica, they're new to the competition, 5-0, so that's not necessarily surprising. But overall, the gaps do look like they're closing, which is really good, because I don't think we're going to see as many 13-0s on aggregate. So,
yeah, well said. Definitely go follow Sophie Lawson and look out for Alex Ibaceta.
I think it's Ibaceta. No, but she's not Italian. That made it sound Italian because I know she's not Italian.
Oh, we're terrible.
Oh, no, she's going to tweet at us. Ibaceta.
Alex Ibaceta.
I want to say Ibaceta, and I've completely offended her and her whole family.
Apologies in the post, Alex. I followed your live tweeting timeline on goal.com. So I was going to say that's really helpful, listener, if you want to kind of keep an eye on things, but maybe you don't have time to watch the game. Go check Alex Ibaceta's. Bloody hell, that's awful.
I thought I was the good one on pronunciations after Jackie Gronin Gate, but actually we're just as bad because we're just English people that butcher all the lovely European languages.
But yeah, they did a great job keeping people informed of the Champions League. I definitely echo what Flo said. I don't watch Juve every week. I watch Lyon versus PSG, but I don't watch Liga every week. So for me, I'm going to talk about the games I watch live, but I don't necessarily have a great feel on all these teams. It was fun to watch a little bit of Ajax Bayern yesterday as well. And I did watch Göteborg versus Man City, which also almost looked like an upset, Flo, although I would argue the Swedish league, you know, have been pretty good for a while. So maybe that's not quite what you're talking about when you're seeing more parity in European football.
Yeah. I mean, the Rosengard, a very, you know, long history of women's football facing the Georgian champions in Tbilisi. That's a hard draw for our lovely
friends. Can you do it on a Thursday night in Tbilisi?
That's the real question.
We'd be remiss to not mention Frank Kirby, who became... You talk about wholesome content. Yes. Let's get the wholesome content, Claxon.
And wholesome Chelsea's content, Claxon, back to Bristol City. Congratulations to Tanya Oxterby and her
wife. I meant to make a joke.
Is it her wife, I think? I think they're married.
Wife or partner. I was going to I was going to make a joke about Unchanged 11 and be like, well, actually, there's a change coming with Oxterby. Yeah, congratulations, Tanya, on the baby. And stay healthy. And
lovely
news.
Keep up the great work in Bristol. A bit of nice news to end the year. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, very sweet announcement on Twitter from the Oxterbys. But going back to Fran Kirby. Chelsea's all-time top goal scorer taking over Enny Aluko. Lots of amazing comments between the two of them, Flo. You've obviously been close to Chelsea and Kings Meadow and Fran, maybe more than any other club, and such a kind of player that maybe sums up the WSL in the timeline, you know, in the last kind of 10 years. A player like Fran taking over from Enny Aluko feels very much like the torch being passed as well. So how did you feel about her hitting 70 goals?
Yeah, I think it was awesome. And there's a great thread which I'm pretty sure breaks lots of rights rules. So if it's still hanging
around,
that's my
favorite kind of thread.
You love doing that. I always have to text you saying, mate, I think you need to take that video down.
I almost posted one the other day and I decided not to do it based on that.
But the account is called Chelsea FC Women Fans, and they've done a really wicked thread of, I think, pretty much all Fran Kirby's goals for Chelsea, or of which they could find clips. And it's really good. Probably lots of the content is illegal, but who cares? They're giving it to us. No, I do care. Obviously, people should do things that are legal, but great
Shut
content.
Up.
And it's just great to see the growth that she's had. And I also think, you know, we talk about the rate at which Miedemar reached her WSL record. Fran Kirby has had so much time out over the last couple of years because of injury, because of illness, because of everything that goes on when you're a professional athlete. And I think to do what she's done in that space of time, with the pressure when she signed for Chelsea at a time when she was one of the most exciting players in England, coming off the back of a big World Cup, and there was loads of pressure on her. And I think this is an important record and milestone for her to hit, because I think her impact will be truly seen then, and people will think, wow, like Frank Kirby is such a good player and such a big player, despite the fact that we haven't necessarily seen the best of her over the last couple of years, or at the World Cup or whatever it may be. And I'm just really excited for her to be able to get some consistent football now ahead of the Euro, the home Euros and the Olympic Games and all these exciting tournaments we have coming up.
There was a lot of great goals during the rounds in that compilation of the wonderful Super Frank Kirby. But my favourite has to be that one against Man City a couple of seasons ago, where she cuts it in on one foot and then finishes it on the other flow.
I have an amazing anecdote about Frank Kirby as well. And I don't know if I've told you this before. So if I have, or I've said it on this podcast, stop me because that's boring. But a couple of years ago, yeah, not last season. I think it was season before. I was working on my usual gig that I'm not really doing so much this season, but when I sort of cover Chelsea and do the post-match for the Women's Football Show, and I was covering Chelsea at Brighton, so they play at Crawley Stadium, and it was a time when Fran Kirby was injured, I think. I don't think it's when she was diagnosed with illness. I think she just had an injury at the time. And I arrived at Crawley, was getting my accreditation, and this security guy was like, oh, I'm a big Chelsea fan. Is Fran playing today? Like, I really want to see her. Like, she's like my favourite women's player. I love her, like, super Fran. I said, oh, she's actually injured at the moment. I'm really sorry. I don't think she's going to come. I don't think she'll travel. And he was absolutely gutted. Anyway, I tweeted about it and I added her, not expecting a reply. And I said, oh, you know, great time at Crawley today. Like, it was really sweet to chat to this security guard who said that Frank Kirby's his biggest player, blah, blah, blah. And I get a DM from Frank Kirby saying, do you know that his name? Like, I'd love to send him a signed shirt or something. And I was like, oh, I have no idea. Let me try and find out. So I rang up Crawley and I asked the receptionist, do you know this guy who works the door at the main reception? And he says he's a massive Chelsea fan. I have no idea what his name is.
You're like, which one? There's five of them who love Frank Kirby. Yeah.
And so I can't even remember his name. I'm going to say Dave or something. Anyway, so I replied to her and I said, I think this is the guy. They've said this is the guy. If you send it to Crawley and address it to him, I'm sure he'll get it. And she just said, yeah, I'll do my best to send him something. I don't know if he ever got something, because I don't think he was on social media, so I never saw, you know, amazing to get these boots from Frank Kirby or whatever. But I just thought that was so amazing. And she's super, you know, those players who, a bit like Ada Hedeberg, who it's so obvious that she's the one on her Twitter. I love players like that, because I think with the bigger players, sometimes it is quite obvious when they're sort of half and half, like they're managing it, but a lot of the time it's their agent or a publicist or whatever. But Frank Kirby is so clearly, like, truly behind her social media page and always engaging with fans, always going above and beyond to connect with them and do stuff. And I just thought that was so cool. And I hope whoever he was in Crawley got something, because it was just such a sweet story.
Great story. It's good to see you assisting Fran, giving her a day off from assisting all her teammates. Great time to plug the Fran Kirby Fight Club podcast. All you Chelsea fans, or, you know, Dub Yourself, Women's Football Enthusiasts. Yes. Wonderful podcast. Definitely go check it out. It's about all things Chelsea and, of course, all things Super Fran Kirby, the lovely Super Fran Kirby. And shout out Dave, if you're listening, if you're still into women's football, or if you're just into Frank Kirby.
Yeah, whoever you are, whatever your name is, shout out you.
Chelsea are back in Crawley this weekend, so it's going to be interesting to see. Maybe Dave will finally get to see Frank
Kirby.
Maybe
they'll be reunited. I didn't even think about that.
I didn't want to interrupt your anecdote, but I was like, oh, it's funny timing you bring this up. We'll take a little break and catch our breath, because I feel like that's a good place to end with that nice warm feeling. And then we'll be back with the weekend football previews. All right, in a bit. All right, welcome back to part two You just had some nice music, we've had some good stories, and we're going to jump into a little WSL Women's Championship preview. What's going on? So you wake up, it's Sunday morning, there's no games on Saturday, and it's noon, 12:30 in the UK, 7:30 on the American East Coast, 10:30 night game out in Australia. Smash on your Optus Sport, BBC Red Button UK, FA Player as well, and Atta Football for the live stream in the US. American people, this game is on Atta Football as well as NBC. Reading are in the early game, Man United. Casey Stoney once again getting a chance to put her Doc Martens top of the league before anyone else has played a game. Flo, Reading are unbeaten in four games, four draws. Do you think they could nick a point off Man United? They did it to their City rivals.
Yeah, and I was at that game, and I think Reading did defend well, but I think it was more City missing a shed load of chances, a bit like Reading did on the weekend.
Full shed.
Sam Mewis's shed that she made in Massachusetts. I think Manu are just too strong. I think they're potent. They know they make the most of their opportunities. I want you to come at me with some XG stuff. To back up what I'm saying, just throw it out there, just come out of your head with it. But I feel like they're an extremely effective team. More so, yeah. I'm going to say it, are they the most effective team in the WSL? I don't know, but they feel like it anyway.
Well, it depends what you mean by effective, because, you know, is effective like creating a lot of chances and finishing a lot of chances, or is effective like you're kind of, the computer says you shouldn't be finishing this amount of chances and you're accidentally scoring this amount of chances? Because, you know, Birmingham, as we've talked about before, are...
That's true.
They're kind of overperforming. So you could say Birmingham, who take very few shots, are not very effective. But United are maybe... They're kind of like right where they should be, which in a way is maybe more impressive if you can create a lot and
I guess it's interesting. I'm just having a look. The Arsenal game, they won 1-0. They had 23 shots. Only five of them were on target. They won 1-0. So perhaps then not that effective because they had a lot of chances. I think, weirdly now, football more generally, especially English football, obviously the one they'll watch the most, just prolific numbers of shots in every single game across every single division, men's and women's. It's mad. Now, regularly, you'll look at game stats and see over 20 shots per game for some teams.
We had two games at the weekend with 30 shots, the Chelsea game and the Arsenal game. And Birmingham are a team that don't do that. And so maybe that's why Birmingham's stats look so, you know, odd in a way, because they're so performing so much higher than their XG. I mean, you talk about Reading, you know, you talk about United taking a lot of shots. I think Reading have bought into that. I don't actually have the numbers in front of me, but I feel like Reading take more shots outside of the box than almost anyone else.
Oh, yeah, they love it. They live for it. And they had 30 on the weekend, didn't we? We talked about that. So
it's... Yeah, Bagley had, you know, made 14 saves. So I feel like, you know, we might need a Farrah Williams or Jess Fishlock special to cause an upset here. But going back to that City game, what Reading did well is they had an early set piece and they got that goal and they had something to defend. And I just wonder whether or not that's the key. Jackie Gronin, who will probably be missing through that head injury. No Kristen Press, who is anonymously out with a kind of undefined illness. And I just wonder if, you know, the weekend, you were so right. Man United were efficient. I've got the XG in front of me. The XG is 18 and they've scored 19. So they're kind of right where they should be. They're definitely effective. But what they do really well is once they get the ball, they know how to work a goal and they take their chances. Players like Ella Toon, Kirsty Hansen, you know, and of course, Tobin Heath are so aggressive. And I think the aggressive nature of United will be the one to watch. Kelly Chambers has played two up front a lot this season. I'm going to be interested to see if she decides to do that or whether or not one or Carter, Harding or Chaplin or Eichlin kind of gets a little change there. This is the early one on Sunday and it should be interesting to watch. And I definitely think we both think Man United should come out on that. Then we're back off to Crawley, where hopefully Dave and Kirby will finally be reunited. Brighton are playing Chelsea. This is where we get the split of four games at 2 p.m. in the UK, 9 a.m. on the American East Coast, and midnight out in Australia. FA Player is where you'll find all these 2 p.m. kickoffs. Brighton against Chelsea, one-way traffic flow. I'm expecting a big performance from Brighton, and Hope Powell, I think, really is owed a big performance from her players in this one. but I'm not necessarily thinking the result will be any different.
It's so hard because you look on the surface, you're like, yeah, easy win for Chelsea, 3 or 4 nil. But then you remember what Brighton managed to do against City and how they frustrated them. And you think, could it be one of those days? But Brighton are just still so up and down. But I think Chelsea, they're in such a free scoring mood at the moment. 3 goals against West Ham, 5 in the week against Benfica. All their players are in such good form. Sam Kerr's finally firing. I just think they've just got so many outlets, whereas Brighton have got anything but, really.
Yeah, and I think that's the difference. Going back to that City game where Brighton did well, I think they only gave about City, really, from what I remember, about 2 good chances. But, you know, Ellen White, Georgia Stanway, Chloe Kelly, they didn't take them. And so I feel like in this game, you know, do we expect harder Kerr, England, you know, Kirby, who is just so magnificent last week, do we expect them to be as profligate? Probably not. I'm going to be interested to see if Emma Hayes brings back Sophie Ingle and maybe goes back to the double pivot with loopholes. We saw that really attacking lineup against West Ham, and I just wonder, especially because England was so fantastic in Portugal midweek, what we're going to see in regards to Chelsea trying to rotate and keep their players fit. But no matter what the lineup, I definitely would back Chelsea. But I'm excited to see how Brighton respond to this one, especially after, and we'll talk a bit about it at the end of the episode, but Denise O'Sullivan in the top 100 players on The Guardian. I love to see it. Big fan of Denise. Shout out to all the American NWSL watchers. Denise O'Sullivan is such a big name out there. So I'm excited to see her go head-to-toe against Chelsea in this one. Staying with the 2 p.m. kickoffs, Birmingham host Everton in a nice mid-table clash. Flo, Everton, you know, so fantastic at the beginning of the season, but now coming into this game, would you go as far to say, is Birmingham a favourite?
It's hard. I think Birmingham will be feeling confident, maybe a bit disappointed off that midweek game, but it was a penalty shootout, so that's a good way to go because you don't feel like it's really up to anything that you did too much as a team.
Well, and they got a clean sheet, which, yeah, you know, Carla Ward really
strategy appreciates. And, you know, it's a weird competition group stage thing. But I don't know, it's tough. Obviously, Everton not in good form, haven't won in the league since
2 months now.
Yeah, and since the FA Cup finals, kind of been, I guess, a bit of a turning point for them, but not in a good way. It's hard. I think, I don't know, because we spoke about the fact that the Arsenal game wasn't too much for Birmingham to be disappointed about, and the narrative Carla Ward had about being disappointed in the refereeing. Like, it's all good mentality-wise. I think it's going to be really interesting. I think it could be, you know, like 2-2 or something like that.
Ooh, you think 2 goals for
Birmingham? I don't know why. I'm just getting vibes. I'm just getting
something. I love it when you feel those vibes.
I think Everton are going to score, for sure. And I think it'll be a really good confidence boost for them. But I just have this feeling that Birmingham are going to make life difficult. And maybe it'll be the Birmingham that we saw in that Man U game earlier in the season that they ended up losing. But they were so good on the break and just kind of hit Man U sleeping. That could be fun.
I think this game's either going to be 1-0 to Birmingham or 2-1 to Everton. I think Birmingham have a really small margin for error. And so I feel like if they can get that goal and really tighten up, or if they can finish that one chance, they can win it. But if they give Everton any room, Everton are the better side, and I think they'll take care of business. But I think we've seen some really good performances from Birmingham, and I could see them doing that. Or, you know, I could see it being 0-0 as well if both teams kind of struggle to get going. But yeah, listener, keep an eye on Hayley Rasso, who should be lining up against Rebecca Holloway, who's been one of my favourite Birmingham defenders. Obviously, there's been a few of them that have really highlighted this year. But Rasso started the season as kind of one of our favourite, you know, most informed players, and has dropped off a little bit the last couple of games, although she did play up front against City at the weekend. So keep an eye on that matchup that I think should be really fun. Staying with the 2 p.m. kickoffs, 10th place Spurs play 9th place Aston Villa after they got that win midweek. Flo, this is, you know, a couple of big games down the bottom now. Spurs, Rian Skinner got their first win of the season. Villa got this huge win midweek. Suddenly we're seeing these bottom teams get a little bit momentum, a little bit morale. This one, I feel like, doesn't really have a clear favourite. Could go either way.
Yeah, this is a fun game. I think Spurs are really on the up. I think confidence is high. They gave out a really good performance on the weekend. I really like what I saw from them. They've got a manager who has great experience, feels like a fantastic choice. And I think the situation with what happened with the departure of two very loved coaches who did so much for the club has kind of, they've done well to sweep it in under the carpet with and not face that much criticism and what seems like not cause too many problems in the camp, which is a hard thing to manage because when you get rid of two coaches who were so loved and all the statements that the Spurs players put out about them were so positive and say, you know, like, you changed my life really from the journey that we went on as a club and as a team. To get rid of them was risky because there's a lot of bond there, there's a lot of love there, but it seems like it hasn't upset the camp too much, and actually they're going to move on quite quickly and they're already making progress, and I think that's a really positive sign for them. And I think they will be too much for Villa, but I think this will be a pretty open game, a game that both sides will probably concede quite a few chances, and I think it'll be a really fun one to watch.
Flo, Taylor Swift released a new album today. I don't know if you heard about that.
I heard about it, I haven't listened to it yet.
We all thought she was done for the year. She released Folklore. Everybody was loving it. Felt like, oh, you know, she's changed. She's gone a little bit rootsier. Everything's in black and white. Then she comes in. She drops Evermore today out of nowhere. Alex Morgan got her loan spell to Tottenham Hotspur. Played in the WSL. No one thought she'd do that. You know, she's feeling it out in England. She's in the cold weather. She's only contracted till the end of 2020. Do we think we'll see a surprise album release drop-esque announcement from Alex Morgan as she extends her contract with Spurs for 2021?
We may do. I don't know, because weren't we still not even 100% sure what the original contract was in the first place. So
my lawyers
haven't
seen it.
Make the memes, because everyone I asked seemed to have something different, and I asked so many people, and they said, well, the club are being a bit guarded about it, with Skinner and Orlando saying, yeah, we expect her to come back in January, and Karen Hills at the time saying that she expected her to stay the whole season. So it was so misleading. But I think she's going to stay. I have a feeling she's going to stay. She seems pretty comfortable. I saw that her husband was over in London now that he's in the off-season from MLS. So I think it's looking good, I think, to seal that extension. Or sort of half extension that maybe she was going to be here the whole time. But anyway, I think it's looking good.
I'm still waiting to see the second half of the second album for Alex Morgan this year. But it was great to see her get off the score sheet and expect big things this weekend from her. Staying in the last game of the 2 p.m. kickoffs, all on FA Player. Bottom side, Bristol City are once again back, staying in Bath and hosting West Ham United, who are only in 11th place. Flo, in the space of 5 days, we've got a quite extraordinary situation where Bristol are playing back-to-back 12th versus 11th place matches, seemingly six-point relegation classics. Can they do better than they did on Wednesday night?
I think they can, because although we saw some positive signs from West Ham at that Chelsea game, they are still so chaotic. And there is nothing that Bristol City love to thrive off more than chaotic energy. We saw it against Spurs when Spurs completely threw away that game and let them back into it. And I think Bristol are very good at smelling blood, smelling teams that are struggling. Maybe not in the Villa game, because that was a team that was struggling. But I think that was maybe more a sense of they came into it a little bit overconfident. But
they rolled the dice and it didn't go their way.
Yeah. Whereas I think they're going to be thinking West Ham think that they can really get their season up and running with 3 points, and Birmingham are going to come and take them by surprise. And I think this game and the Spurs Villa game, you know, two real relegation interesting set of games, I think they're going to be the most interesting games of the weekend, maybe bar the blockbuster Blue Ribbon Sunday sesh, which is what we'll move on to talk about. Segue alert.
Yeah, I just want to say one last thing, which is I hope Bristol stick with the back five, because it definitely sets them up. And I would like to see them just try and shorten the game. Like you said, West Ham a little bit chaotic. So know that West Ham will let you in, even if it's for 20, 30 minutes in the game. So just try and shorten the game, Bristol. Give yourself a chance. You know, keep the block in place for a long time. And then you might get that glimpse. If, you know, it's still 0-0 with 10 minutes to go, then roll the dice. They rolled the dice a little early against Villa. But, you know, Rachel Daly will punish you if you're not on your game with that five at the back. But yeah, as you said, let's move on. Arguably, like you said, the Blue Ribbon game. This is the, you know, that everyone must go and see. BT Sport are showing this one. NBC are saying at a football of the live stream. FA player in all the other places, not DAZN, not Optus. Fourth place, Manchester City, a play in Arsenal in Manchester, 2:30p on kickoff in the UK, 9am and in the US and midnight in Australia. Flo, what are you looking forward to about this blockbuster top four matchup?
Well, I hope it's going to be good.
That's a good place to start.
I do worry sometimes when we amp these games up a bit too much. I thought this season the big games have still been entertaining. They haven't been slugfest. They've been pretty low scoring affairs. But Arsenal Chelsea 1-0 still had the drama. Man U Arsenal still had the drama. Chelsea, Man City. Chelsea were just far too good for Man City that day. So they haven't been massive. It's not been like nil-nils, you know, drudge fest. But
United City was maybe the spiciest of that selection.
Yeah. So I just hope it's an entertaining, good quality game, and the standard meets the hype. I think City are going to be too good for Arsenal. I don't know why, because we actually didn't really talk about their game in the Champions League midweek, but they fell asleep at the wheel, which they do quite early in games, conceded early from a corner as well, wasn't it? And had to work their way back into that game, ended up winning it 2-1 thanks to Sam Mewis. But I think there has been growth from them, and their team is coming together so nicely, completely destroyed Everton on the weekend. And yeah, I think there's just a lot of positivity there, and there's a nice blend of youthfulness and experience, and I think they're going to be too good for Arsenal. I don't know why. I'm just sensing it. Or it could be like a 2-2 situation. I think there's going to be a fair amount of goals, which is great.
Well, yeah. I mean, just kind of going off that, you talked about these kind of other big ones we've seen. You know, City didn't necessarily try and change anything up when they played Chelsea and they got well beat. They started well against United, but really let that one go. Arsenal, tactically, Montemurro really changed things up and got it right. And we saw that beautiful kind of Kim Little, cautious but smart possession football, but like, don't take any risks. You know, Leah Williamson, you can just clear it out if you need to. We're not going to hold on to the ball against Chelsea. And they, you know, they nearly, very, very nearly beat Chelsea. Do you think we'll see Montemurro be quite cautious again? Or do you think he's going to let, you know, Jill Roard and Caitlin Ford just kind of go and play their football? Or do you think we'll see a little bit more caution?
I don't think we're going to see caution, because both of them need 3 points to keep themselves in the mix.
Definitely City.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe City more than Arsenal, because they've dropped quite a few points already this season. But they've really got to go for it. And I think they're two really competitive teams. I think they will do that. I think we'll see two really strong 11s put out. I don't think anyone's going to be sitting back or not putting out a really attacking lineup.
Hear, hear. Well, yeah, let's get a prediction for that one, Flo, just before we wrap up the WSL.
Due.
I'm going to go for 2-1 Man City. Don't know why. Same score as in the FA Cup semi-final.
Just a vibe.
Feeling the vibes. And in the FA Women's Championship, this one's on FA Player, 2 p.m. on Sunday. Sheffield United playing Blackburn Rovers, which is sort of the best pick of another FA Women's Championship selection, where you're seeing a lot of kind of good, quote-unquote good teams playing some of the bottom teams. London City are hosting Liverpool. Charlton are hosting Leicester City. Lewis are playing Crystal Palace. And Coventry are hosting Durham in the battle of two non-men's teams affiliated championship clubs, which is going to be an interesting one, although Coventry are really struggling, so expect Beth Heppel to do a lot of goal scoring for Durham in that one. Flo, obviously check out your ticket options if you are trying to go to games. If you're not feeling well, don't go. Wear a mask. Make sure you buy in advance and follow all the
don't
protocols.
Listen to us.
But yeah, I know Lewis are having tickets if you are in the Sussex area and you want to buy in advance and be very safe. And similarly, Reading as well. And Spurs, I think, have opened their stadium up to beyond just season ticket holders. Although for £35, you can get the remaining 8 Spurs home matches. So definitely check that out. Flo, finally, we're going to end this pod talking a little bit about the top 100 women's football players in the whole wide world have been announced by Guardian and the wonderful Rich Laverty.
In the whole wide world.
Sorry, I meant the top 100 players, excluding Buadi.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a long-standing collaboration between Offside Rule and Rich and The Guardian, kind of spearheaded by Rich. And he had what can only be described as a mare doing what none of us want to do, but it made a mistake at work in a very public way and then got called out or replied to by the very person he made the mistake about. But long story, I think his tweet just said that Sarah Buadi somehow got left out of the long list that got sent to the judges. I think it's an Excel spreadsheet situation problem and ended up not featuring in the list that got sent to judges and therefore not in the top 100. And he tweeted about it and her sort of cryptic, funny reply was, oh, well, it's all about the team anyway, so it doesn't really matter. So she took it well. But I like the way she said, the story is pretty weird, like arms up emoji. But the best things is like the titles we win for the team. So that was pretty sweet. But
it's true.
Yeah.
She's right. She's not wrong.
No, she's not wrong. And all in all, I mean, you know, these lists are lists. But to be honest, I think this one is the best, in my opinion, because a lot of hard work goes into it. It's not just a shiny best of list that someone produces who knows nothing about women's football. It's the furthest thing from just being kind of cosmetic window dressing. It's put together by people who have been in the women's game for so long and voted on by a judging panel who know a shitload about women's football, including legends like Sophie Lawson in that, who know so much about the global game, way beyond English women's football. And I think that's why, for me, it's the best all-round package, because it takes so much into consideration. And yes, you know, it's surprising that I didn't even realise that Press and Heath weren't on there. And maybe that's an interesting one. But I do think it does take a lot into consideration. And it's a real global list. And I think when you look at other ones like FIFA Pro that also came out this week, where it is mainly big names, big US women's national team players who don't play a lot of games for their club side, I think this is a bit more reflective of everything. But yes, it does tend to skew towards European players because they just get more club action. They've got a Champions League, they've got more cup competitions. It's much easier for them to get exposure and get game time and get goals. So I don't know what you think.
No, I agree with you. I think if we're going to, I wouldn't poke fingers at Rich, his process, the 88 journalists who put this together. I think they did a fantastic job. I think listing players in a who's better than who list in the game of football doesn't really, that it's flawed.
I mean, before, yeah, it's meaningless, right?
It's right. So that's my point, is I think they've done a great job. I think it's fun. We're talking about it. It gets more exposure. For me, it ticks all the boxes. But I totally agree that, like, you know, having Marin Melder at 39 and, you know, Asselani at 35, it doesn't necessarily mean one player is better than the other. It's really kind of hard to,
and on also, I guess I would maybe partly disagree with that, because I think in men's football, no, I agree, it doesn't matter who's where.
Right.
I wouldn't say
no, I thought you were like, you know what, Asselani really does deserve to be.
No, that doesn't matter. And I think people who have meltdowns on Twitter and at Rich about this kind of stuff, like, what a sad little life, because that is unnecessary. But I do think these top 100 sorts of things are really important in women's football, because you get to know new names and faces.
Yeah.
Or you give exposure to players who maybe don't play in the country that you follow the most. Whereas the men's lists, I don't really think have any value, because there's so much exposure for those players. Unless it's like, I like the ones where it's like the most exciting young players under the age of 21 or something. That's cool, because you're like, oh, you know, the generation, the future stars or whatever. But with women's football, I think they're far more important, especially lists like these, because you get the FIFA ones and the FIFA Pro ones, which is just so many familiar, uber famous players that are well known for playing international tournaments, whereas this is far broader, taking into account so many different players from so many different leagues. And I just think that's kind of why it's unique and maybe takes it a level up to your average, just like basic, here's a list of players that are quite good.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Khadija Shaw at 49, who's top scorer in Ligue 1 right now for Bordeaux, but plays for Jamaica. I think it's a great example of that, a player who has been kind of on the radar of a lot of people, but, you know, is maybe underrepresented because of her international football. Someone else in that category as well, Denise O'Sullivan, who we mentioned at 74, who's been huge for the North Carolina Courage, winning two championships, now is playing the WSL, but plays for Republic of Ireland. And I think you're seeing players like that get the exposure they really, really deserve.
Shea Groom.
Yeah, I mean, Shea Groom, I think, Shea is Groom. A player who is kind of different in that, like, she's just so on form. She's obviously, like, had a long history in and out of different NWSL sides who I'm sure not a lot of English people probably had seen her play before this year. And it's really great that this, like you said, the exposure and the diversity of journalists in this has given someone like Shea her great 2020 has not gone amiss. So yeah, I love to see, you know, Shea, Mewis and Daly in there, obviously, for what I cover is really great to see. And I think they all deserve it. Before, and Lynn Williams as well was the other one I was going to say at 38. I think Lynn Williams, who's the NWSL's all-time top scorer and has taken a long time to kind of get what she deserves with the women's national team. I think she's been amazing and it's great to see her really represented on there. Flo, let's go out with a little, because we love to chat and we love to annoy people. So let's do a little underrated, overrated. I'll say a player and where they are. And you can just say underrated, overrated. Okay. We'll do a few of them. And then people can at us and say they hate us and we'll move on. All right.
Why? I mean, I don't want to mess with your game, but we could do like higher or lower, but maybe that would take some prior planning. But we could have done like, is Kirsty Mewis higher or lower than, but let's go with your game.
Okay.
I just made your game better, but.
We can do that if you want. You want two names?
I mean, I feel like that just requires more.
All right.
We're recording now, so I'm just awkward.
It's all live. It's all live, listener.
Yeah, we'll do it live.
Okay, I'm going to start with Nadia Nadim, 50.
I feel rude saying this, but overrated. I'm so sorry, Nadia.
Real talk. Beth England, 26.
That's a hard one because I don't necessarily disagree with any of the players that come higher than her in terms of like closer to one, not higher numerically. What if I just think that's the right position? Do I just say
that's great? Just say like, yeah, love it.
Yeah, love it.
Rated.
Yeah,
absolutely
good.
Rated. And one last one, Crystal Dunn, 21.
No, rated.
Rated. Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go. Flo loves the list.
Do you want me to do some for you?
Yeah, you do some for me.
Okay.
I kind of agree with you. I think Nadia is maybe a little overrated. I think Beth England's about where she needs to be going off 2020. And I would have put Crystal Dunn in the top 10. I think Crystal Dunn's better than Julie Ertz. And I like Julie Ertz.
Steph Horton, 42.
Oh, no. You can't do me like this. overrated.
I would have said overrated too.
I love
too,
you, Steph.
So don't worry.
I love
we can
you,
both,
Steph.
We can both die on that hill. You're good. Friend, Jackie Glennon, 48.
Underrated.
Interesting. Very interesting. She is a player who sort of quietly does her business. She's not flashy. She doesn't get goals.
I think I'm a little bit of recency bias, but I think the way she started this season, that's underrated. But going off a bigger sample size, maybe she's rated or even over. That's where it's like it's hard to. I need a timeline, but I'm a big fan. You know,
yeah.
I'm a big fan.
I think recency bias just it inflates everything. Really, you can't take away from recency bias, and yeah, I think that's hard. I'm gonna say this one because we talked about it pre-pod, and I know you have strong opinions.
You're doing me twice.
Alyssa Nayer, 58.
Overrated. Not even the best keeper in the NWSL, and that's our show.
Drop. That's our show.
Yeah, go follow us on at Relatively Football on Twitter. No, at Relatively Foot on Twitter. No ball. No ball on Twitter. At Relatively Football on Instagram. RelativelyFootball@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Give us a review. Tell your friends. And enjoy a wonderful weekend of football. Flo, stay well.
Cheers, mate. You too.
Cheers. Good night. Or good morning. Oh, I don't know where we are. See ya.
Good night.